Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an Hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be talking about a subject matter that it's a little bit interesting in the fact that we're going to be talking about why we love dogs, eat pigs, and wear cows. Does that grab your interest? Well, my guest, Melanie Joy, she is going to be giving us some inside perspectives as she has done quite a bit of research about animals. Melanie, I want to welcome you to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Now, Melanie, you are a social psychologist and professor of psychology and sociology at the University of Massachusetts in Boston, and you have done a lot relative to animals' rights, and you've written stories about them and articles, and you are also very much obviously involved in psychology and what you call social justice. But you got a master's degree in teaching and curriculum from the Harvard Graduate School of Education. What turned you on to get into the psychology of carnism?
Well, it's interesting. I grew up, like many Americans, with a dog who I loved like a family member. And I also grew up, like most Americans, eating meat, often multiple times a day. And I never thought about how strange it was that I could pet my dog and eat my hamburger and not see the inconsistencies in my attitudes and behaviors toward animals. And as time went on, you know, I had that knowing without knowing. On one level, I knew that an animal had to die for my plate, and on another level, I just preferred not to know, not to connect the dots. And so there was this gap in my consciousness, and as time went on, as I became aware of this gap and then started to work to close this gap in my consciousness, it really led me to want to educate others about what I had learned, about how my paradigm had shifted. And I did go into a program to become a teacher, and what I found was that I would be giving talks about meat production and animal suffering and animal welfare, and many of the people who came to my talks were deeply moved by what they heard, and yet also went home and then just continued to eat meat. Kind of what they heard wore off after a while, and I was really interested to learn what exactly is it that enables us, you know, myself included, as having been a meat eater most of my life, humane people to participate in inhumane practices without even realizing what we're doing. And so that really led me to want to learn about the psychology. Why wasn't information alone enough? And then I went to pursue my PhD in psychology with this question in mind.
Well, you've got some interesting perspectives, and I say interesting because if one is a world traveler, you encounter cultures all over the world who are surviving on whatever is available. And your point about dogs, and you start off right off the bat because Americans really love their dogs. But in many parts of the world, especially Asian countries, dogs, snakes, snails, you name it, whatever, is part of what goes on the table if that is what is available. And there's a lot of cultural aspect that is here. In your studies, did you go into various cultural paradigms?
Yes, I did. And, and the point you raise is very good, in that the content, the what kind of animal that's eaten changes from culture to culture. And sometimes this is based on what's available, but oftentimes it's actually not rational. It's not a rational decision that a culture makes. But in meat-eating cultures around the world, people tend to have a select few animal species that they consider edible, that they feel comfortable consuming out of the thousands of animal species that are possible to consume. And they tend to see their choices as rational and other cultures' choices as offensive and disgusting. So it's very interesting to me why it is that, you know, in the United States, for instance, as you pointed out, we do love dogs, we don't eat dogs, and this is not the case in some other places in the world. Why is it that we have, you know, four or five, maybe six or seven species that we are not disgusted by eating when we're disgusted at the idea of eating all other types of animal species? It's this absence of disgust that was so striking to me.
Well, if you look at different cultures, for example, you look at a lot of the Native Americans, and I'm aware of this, especially relative to the Alaskans, the Alaska Natives, and there is a group called the Inuit, and they are omnivores, like all of us are, and they would stockpile fish, but every year they had to go and hunt the caribou, which was on a migratory route, and that would prepare them for winter. And one of the things that affected them very strongly is that if they had nothing but fish, it wasn't enough of a protein concentrate for them. And, of course, they're up in the far north, and they don't have root vegetables available, excepting maybe if they're fortunate enough during the spring of the year, and then that's a very short duration. So they would have to have caribou, and physiologically they were affected very dramatically if they just ate nothing but fish. Mm-hmm. So there was a complex compound of proteins that the caribou meat actually would give them that gave them the stamina that they needed, because if they just had fish and only fish all year long, didn't make any difference whether it was whale, salmon, what have you, it wasn't healthy for them. So I think many times cultural diversities are really a fascinating factor to study. And human beings, usually when we adopt something, then that's just the way it is, and our biochemistry adapts to that. And to make an adjustment or a shift psychologically is a very difficult thing to do, because the body adaptation and so many other factors. Now, this is something that you made a change with, but I agree with you in part that some of this is acquired learning. Yet I had someone with me just this last Saturday who's a vegetarian. And from the time she was a little girl, she just wouldn't eat meat, just wouldn't eat it. And everybody else in the family was fine, but then as it turned out, there were a couple of her siblings that were like her. So there was a difference, and nobody told them it was good, bad, or indifferent, and she said, that's just the way I've been. So it's a fascinating phenomena. When you talk to people that had, let's say, become vegetarians, did you find that there was a cultural influence? Did you find that they had experiences like you did that made the shift in them? What was the predominant patterning, or was there one?
Mm-hmm. Well, you raised some really great, really important points, and one of the things that you were talking about was, you know, people in cultures where they have no choice but to eat animals. And where meat eating is a necessity. And the work that I've done and the writing that I have done and the research that I've done has not been so focused, even though I do touch upon that a little bit, on cultures where meat eating is a necessity. In most cultures, meat eating cultures in the world today, it is not a necessity for people to eat meat. And when eating meat is not a necessity, it's a choice, and choices always stem from beliefs. And so what I've tried to do is to expose the invisible, you know, widespread, entrenched belief system that conditions us to eat some animals but not others, and to name that. And I call that carnism. It's essentially, you can think of it as sort of the opposite of vegetarianism, because we tend to assume that it's only vegetarians who bring their beliefs to the dinner table. And I think it's very important to name the belief system that underlies meat consumption, because otherwise we see eating meat as a given rather than a choice. And we don't realize that there are other options. And you're right, there are people who are more sensitive to this right from the get-go when they're young. I was one of those kids. I was one of those kids who needed to have my meat, you know, well done. Nothing could be rare or look like it had any blood in it. You know, the vein in the drumstick was always very distressing for me. And I've heard this from a number of people, but you know, I've also heard from a number of people that it never crossed their mind that they were fully comfortable eating meat for much of their lives, and you know, they had an experience when they were ready to, because the information's always been out there. The information was out there for me throughout my life, and I wasn't ready to take in the reality of meat production and what that means. And, you know, when people do allow themselves to open up to the truth about meat production and what it does, the impact it has on the animals, on the planet, on their bodies, on their health, on their minds, and the truth about carnism, it does create this paradigm shift. You see the same thing very differently. And so vegetarians do, in a sense, live in a very different world in some ways.
I would agree with that. And something that I would just like to say, that my friend on Saturday, because we were looking over a menu and we were discussing this very subject, which I thought was interesting, because here I am chatting with someone that has written a book about this very thing, and on Tuesday, and I said, well, this is fascinating conversation. And so she said that it's interesting, Donna, I know animals eat animals. She said, I'm not unaware of this, that in nature there are these patterns out there. But for some reason, it just didn't work for me. And I said, hey, there's no guilt here. There's no concern over this. I do know that there is and has been a growing shift regarding the attitude about animals. And in many cultures, and a lot of it had to do with religious beliefs, animals were dumb animals. And this is something that goes back centuries. We're not talking about something that just happened day before yesterday. And so there was a lot in the Western culture that goes back many, many, many centuries with this kind of attitude. You go into certain parts of the world where centuries ago that was not the belief system. There was a shift. They said everything that is alive has a level of intelligence. There is this awareness here. And there is a different philosophical base, and you deal with what we're dealing with today when we're literally having to feed billions of people, not 100,000 or 200 million. We're talking about billions of people on this planet, and food source and protein is something that often gives people a stamina that they would not have otherwise. Again, going back to certain environments. So You look at these different components, and it's really a fascinating phenomena. And I really like some of the points that you bring out relative to the thought patternings that people have. How some people will say, well, pigs are just stupid. We have a friend, we've known this person for years, who thinks that dogs are stupid. And when that person said this, I said, excuse me. But there are these, you know, this is just it. It does take a shifting of thinking, and I think that animal welfare is very important, regardless of the species. And we are seeing a shift somewhat, but your research has brought in a number of different interviews that you have done. A lot of people don't even really know what happens with animals, you know, how they live, like kids, pigs don't have sweat glands. We have become so far removed, even in schools. I mean, here in the state of Washington, most children, the only reason they know what a pig looks like is they go to the Puyallup Fair. And they have a chance to see steers, and there's a lot of children that is the only time that they actually see a live animal other than a dog, maybe, or a cat, or maybe a hamster. Maybe they got a pet rat. Who knows? But in general, there is this disassociation that occurs. What would you suggest that would be an option for reversing that?
Well, you know, I think it's very important. And you're right. I mean, there is a growing consciousness around this issue. People are starting to recognize that, you know, really start talking seriously about animal welfare, the fact that 10 billion land animals, not even including sea life, fish and other sea animals, 10 billion land animals alone are killed every year in the United States for their flesh and other body parts. raised in intensive confinement and conditions that make even the most hardened person cringe to hear about. And, you know, so there is this growing concern, and we are starting to really have conversations about this, about the impact of meat production on the environment. Mass meat production is the single greatest threat to some of the most pressing problems of the environment facing us today, human rights issues. You know, as you pointed out, we're trying to feed billions of people right now on this planet, and you know, how are we using our resources? We're feeding soy, we're feeding plants to animals, and then we're eating the animals, when if we ate the plants directly, we'd take up vastly less land space. So, you know, there is a raising of consciousness, and you know, what we really need to do, in my opinion, is to become aware, not simply about the truth about meat production, but the truth about the system that is carnism, because this impacts us, this system of thought, this social system, it impacts us every single day, no matter who we are. It shapes our preferences, our attitudes, our behaviors, our feelings, our thoughts, our lack thereof. We need to break through this dissociation, and the dissociation is really, you know, it's a psychological disconnect. You know, it's when you're not fully experiencing or not fully feeling and thinking about your experience. So, for instance, when the average person sits down to a beef stew, they're not feeling, they're not thinking, I'm eating another living being. They're looking at that beef stew, they're seeing it as food. They're not thinking about who that food came from and what that being's life was like. And if they did, they'd probably have a difficult time eating it. In my book, I talk about, you know, I have the reader imagine that they're sitting down to a delicious beef stew, and they ask their host for the recipe, and the host replies that the secret is in the meat and that you need to use 3 pounds of well-marinated golden retriever. Now, because we're not conditioned to just stop thinking and stop feeling when it comes to eating dogs, for instance, most people are horrified at that thought. So I think people need to become aware of the system that's carnism and of the truth about meat production, and that was really the goal of my book, to make the invisible visible so that people can make their choices freely, because without awareness, there is no free choice.
Well, and that's true. But also, too, when you are eating vegetables, they have to be live. They have to be something that has a life force in them, because if you don't, I mean, that is just the reality of life. You watch you watch nature out there, you're going to find birds eating worms, and they're alive when they're eating them, and you find fish, and you find all kinds of creatures. Your lions in there hunting, you find all kinds of creatures that are, you know, feeding on other creatures, and we're part of that animal kingdom. But we are fortunate that we can have choices, like you said, where we can have vegetables. But again, there is a challenge when it comes to that, because when you're growing grains, you have to have acres and acres of grains. You have to know how to be able to do things in a different way. And I think many of the points that you bring out are good points in your book, Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows, because there needs to be a different way of thinking. That if we are raising animals to feed a population, because not everybody's going to become a vegetarian, it's just not going to happen. It's just one of these things to be humane about what we do, to really think about what we do. And that's not something that is easy for many people to reflect upon. It's just like when we had a plastic in the industry that came around. You have all of these wonderful benefits of plastic, and then you have this 2,000-mile area out in the middle of where? I believe it's the Atlantic, that is so loaded with debris that it's from all over the world. There's a current that just brings it in. It's like a whirlpool of plastic, brings it all in there. We are reaping today the poisons and the toxins and the things that we, for all intents and purposes, on the mass level, did not have any clue about how it would affect us.
You're absolutely right, and it's so important to look at, it's the same mentality that enables us to, you know, raise and slaughter billions of animals per year in these just horrific conditions. The same mentality that enables us to eat somebody else without even thinking about what we're doing this is the mentality that enables us to destroy our environment, to, you know, toxic dumping. It's this disconnect. It's this denial. It's the don't tell me that you'll ruin my meal. And we really do, I think, have a responsibility to ourselves, to our planet, and to others to become aware. Regardless as to what people ultimately choose to do, I think we all have a responsibility to become aware of the impact of our choices on ourselves and on others and on the planet. And we can't do that unless we step outside carnism, the system, because we are so conditioned to see the world through the eyes of carnism that it's virtually impossible to think freely until we really unravel it and make it visible, become aware of what it is and how it affects us. And then people have the choice. They can become informed consumers and empowered citizens. You raised an issue about plants and pointing out that plants have life force and are sentient. And I know this is a somewhat controversial issue, and I tend to agree with you on that. And people will say to me, well, you know, so what about the plants? You're eating plants. How do you feel about that? But the truth is that, you know, to live on this planet, you are going to cause harm to others. There's just no way. We have to eat to survive. So who are we going to cause harm to? And the challenge, in my opinion, is how do we do the least harm? How do we live the most in harmony with the planet, with ourselves, with our own integrity and ethics? And, you know, eating plants directly requires us to consume far less plant life than we would have to if we ate them through the animals that are fed massive quantities of plants before they're turned into meat. So it is a way of, I think, reducing suffering to plants and to animals if we stop eating meat.
Well, I don't see that happening. I mean, I'll be very frank with you. I do not see that happening. But I like many of the points that you bring out in your book, because I think that there needs to be an intelligent awareness. Mm-hmm. And then, as you said, when we're aware of our choice, and that's why so many people today are being more thoughtful about, you know, if they are going to get meat or they're going to get fowl or even fish. I mean, this is something, what we're looking at is if we're caretakers, and many people were indoctrinated that they're not the caretakers. And this is something that goes back for centuries. And you can look at Polynesian history where people lived on islands and they totally decimated the food that was around them completely. Animal, vegetable, and mineral. And they had to move to another island. And they found evidence of this. They were going to starve to death if they didn't move. And mankind has always been, if there was not a huge population of people on the planet, as there are today. There's a huge population on the planet, and it's multiplying rapidly. Whether it's animal, vegetable, mineral, or what have you, until we become caretakers and understand that if we don't take care of what we've got, then we're destroying ourselves. We're going to poison ourselves. We'll starve to death. There's so many examples of this throughout the world. It's not just in the United States. It's not that at all. It's around the world. And people who are sincere caretakers of the environment have an understanding of this. And this is something where I think you bring up a lot of points that cause people perhaps to pause, to question, and to say, you know, do I need to see this? There's not many people today that are living on farms. There aren't many people that are out there dealing with everyday life of survival in the way and means that our grandparents, our great-grandparents did. Mm-hmm. I know because my grandmother lived on a farm. Mm-hmm. And the way that they had to survive is that they had to take care of their own food production. And that meant animals, and that meant also grains or whatever they could get. But in the part of the country they were in, they only had so many months to be able to pull this all together. And the rest of the time, if the food hadn't been stored properly, they would go hungry. There weren't 7-Elevens, there weren't Safeways, there weren't the big stores, there weren't the Costcos or anything like that available. So when you deal with the realities of life and survival, it is something that, again, I think people are so disassociated from. I just wish they'd spend some time with some 4-H'ers.
Yeah, you're right, and you're so right when you say that, you know, we really need to bring an intelligent awareness to this conversation, and that really was my hope with the book, was to, you know, help people look at, first of all, to really invite meat eaters into the conversation, to not just have another book about why people shouldn't eat meat, but, you know, to really talk about why do we eat meat in the first place, what's going on when we do eat meat psychologically and emotionally for us. And also to help people see that meat eating is not necessarily simply a matter of personal ethics, but it's the inevitable end result of a deeply entrenched belief system. And I think this can really shift the way that we think and we talk about the issue, and I will be very happy if this issue is discussed publicly with an intelligence and with an analysis, not simply of the consequences, you know, on the environment, on the animals, on our health, but really a discussion of the foundations of this, of the ideology or the belief system that's kind of allowed for all of these consequences to have evolved.
There are a number of groups and organizations that you have listed in your book, so people have an opportunity if they want to check out different things, find out what's happening in the world today, and those people that are really wanting to make a difference in the welfare and care of animals. So the book, Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows, it might be something that would be a very controversial subject matter. It would be something that maybe it would be a great thing to bring up at, believe it or not, at a mealtime when you have a bunch of kids around, especially if they've never been around animals. If they have not been raised on a farm, they don't know what's going on, what happens, this type of thing. And I just know from personal contact with various people throughout the country and in the farming area that so many people involved in the farming industry are really very compassionate when they come to their animals. They really love them. They really care for them. But there are always those that are out there that don't. They are totally disassociated. They don't think that animals have any feelings. They really don't look at them as a significant life form. So I think your book presents a lot of good thinking that and questioning points that enable people to really, you know, have a conversation and to say, what about your paradigms? What do you think about this? What do you think about that? And I think especially as we're looking at a world where the consumption of the animals of the sea has reached a point where the major predators are disappearing, where we have all kinds of things that are coming to attention that we didn't want to even look at. And this is, again, relative to cultures around the world. There is no one on this planet that lives in a part of the country that does not have an impact. And when you've got billions and billions of people, the challenge is, how are you going to feed these billions and billions of people? If you're dealing with droughts, if you're dealing with landmass areas, you've got various chemicals in the soil, you've got all kinds of things that you have to contend with. There's a lot of good points that can be examined, and we may have listeners out there that will have some solutions and resolutions. And that's why I think your book, Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows, is good for someone to read because it promotes conscious mindfulness and asking, what could I do differently? And I think anything that promotes that or causes you to question in any way is a good thing. I don't see that as bad.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, do you have a website that people can go to?
I do. They can either go to melaniejoy.org, MelanieJoy.org, or carnism.com.
And that's CarnisM.com.
Yes.
Carnism.com or MelanieJoy.com. So you have
or
your
MelanieJoy.org.
.org. I beg your pardon. MelanieJoy.org or Carnism, CARNISM.com. Melanie, we're just about out of time here. Is there a thought you would like to leave with my audience today?
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I always enjoy open, you know, intelligent conversations like this, and I thank you for having me on. And,
it's been a delight.
You mentioned small farms, and you know, you're absolutely right. They're disappearing, and you know, over 90% of the meat that makes it to the average American's plate comes from factory farms, comes from an animal, somebody who has suffered terribly and probably hasn't had a single good day in their lives. So if people can just become aware of this truth and how it impacts them, I really do think that they'll find it empowering to have new knowledge and to be able to make different choices.
Melanie Joy. Her book is an interesting read, Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows. I love the golden retriever, by the way, that's on the front. Or is that a lab? Is that a lab or a retriever?
It's a retriever.
It's a retriever. I love retrievers. They're just gorgeous. This is Donna Sebo. Melanie, again, thank you for being my guest today. We are taking a break. We're going to come back in just a minute. Don't forget our website, melaniejoy.org or carnism.com. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Hello, this is Donna. Give me a call if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Those telephone lines are now open, 888-815-9756. I realized that I hadn't finished the last part of the 2010 spring horoscope. I don't think I got to you Sagittarians or Capricorns or Aquarians or Pisceans. Well, how about if I do that right now? Now, if you want to give me a buzz, 888-815-9756 is the number to call. Okay, 2010 spring horoscope for those of you under the sign of Sagittarius. Personal life, you are going to be focusing on that a great deal. Also, you are really going to be concerned about your home. This is a great time of the year if you want to do some refreshing paint to brighten up your environment. Focus around your home because it's going to enable you to work through some issues that perhaps you have some loose ends about. And family affairs, it's going to be very important to you, so don't ignore them. Now, when it comes to money and career, you are going to find that as you are able to focus on your home and your family, there's going to be an opportunity for you to lighten up about any anxiousness regarding career, and some new ideas are going to start flowing your way. You're going to find that you will have the opportunity to make some choices and changes as you so desire. Now, travel, if you're wanting to do what you want to do, you are going to have to plan it. There's no way out of that. But why don't you try something you've never done before? If you've never done surfing, go try surfing. If you've always wanted to go to some place unique and special, do it. Don't wait until the perfect time, the perfect place, or the perfect whatever. It never happens. And or that, either that or you're too old and you'll pass away before you even have a chance to do it. So really make some plans. Have fun with it. If you've got a family, involve the family in the planning as well. And they can work with a budget just like you can, and you can have a fabulous, fabulous travel time. For those of you born under the sign of Capricorn, you are going to find your life is really going to be sweet. As always, home and family is going to be the rock for you. You'll have all the support you need to overcome any obstacles maybe that you're going through. And when it comes to money, you are going to find that you're really going to be doing well with money this year because you're going to be conscientious, attentive, and this is a time for you to research. Those of you that are born under the sign of Capricorn, where do you want your money to go? How can you compound those dollars so that you can build your assets and have cash in your pocket? Not credit card debt, but cash in your pocket. Traveling, well, you're going to find there's a lot of little odds and ends of trips that you're going to have a chance to acquire. And don't be surprised if you find that you bring a new fur person into your home, whether it's a dog, a cat, could be a guinea pig, I have no idea, maybe a hamster, but you're going to have perhaps the opportunity to adopt an animal and bring that animal into your home. For those of you under the sign of Aquarius, when it comes to romance and family, well, you're sort of going to be going around in circles on this. It seems like the family is going to be very demanding, and you're going to have to really sit down and work out whatever it is that needs to be worked out as far as planning and time management goes. And if you're in the dating carousel, well, just realize you don't have to stay on that ring around the ring for very long if you don't want to. You can get off whenever you are ready, but don't be in a hurry. Don't try to make things happen in relationships. If you do, you're going to be disappointed. Money and career, it looks like you are going to find that your prosperity is going to increase, but it's not going to be in gigantic steps. It's going to be in little steps because you're going to be paying attention to what you're doing. You're also going to find yourself more effective with networking, which I think is absolutely wonderful, and I want to encourage you to do that. Travel and all kinds of new things coming in your way, but don't be afraid to look for bargains. Sometimes you want to be not the bargain hunter. Hey, go ahead and look for those bargains, and you might find yourself enjoying some adventures on a budget that you never dreamed were possible. Last sign of the zodiac, those of you born under the sign of Pisces for this spring, you have got a lot around you that just seems to be flowing. Now, for those of you under the sign of Pisces, you're going to be a little bit reserved, but I've got news for you. You've got a knack for diplomacy, and you're going to be able to balance career and home. And you just need to work out some things and be willing to adapt to some of the changes that are evolving. Money and career, you know what? If you have a hobby, ask yourself, could this hobby end up being some kind of an opportunity for me that I could expand into something bigger and better? If you do your homework, you may find that there's a way for you to make extra money and really enjoy doing what you love to do. You know, sometimes we have to work at jobs we're not particularly excited about, but that may be a means to an end. So keep your mind and attitudes open. Traveling? Well, you're going to find that travel is sort of on the quiet side for you this year, for those of you under the sign of Pisces. And you do have to pay attention to your food plan, because if you're not careful, it's going to be very easy for you to do some emotional eating and get rather chunky if you don't want to get too chunky. So just be alert, be aware, and I think you're going to be able to come into summertime feeling good about yourself and being pleased with the warmer weather that you have taken good care to make sure that you stay fit as a fiddle and trim as you want to be. This is Donna Sebo, and if you'd like to chat with me, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Can you believe it? Easter is just around the corner. And I'm seeing so many bunnies everywhere I go. It's just amazing. Of course, my favorite are the chocolate kind. And I like dark chocolate, the solid chocolate bunnies. And I just, you know, I'm sort of, well, you might say discerning about the type. There's a particular type of chocolate that I just love. It's absolutely wonderful. Well, do you know what? If you're like me and you like those chocolate, dark chocolate Easter bunnies, do you know the Australians did some research that said that chocolate is a quick and enjoyable mood lifter? But there's also elements in chocolate that can boost your immunity, lower heart disease and cancer risk, help ease PMS, fatigue, and even, well, would you believe it, rev up your libido. Well, of course that's what's what happens. My goodness, anybody that gets Valentine's candy knows how that happens. Yes, 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 yes. Let me share a story with you about chocolate. I had a neighbor, and she was a nurse in a radiation department at a hospital. And Sandy and I became quite good friends. And she told me about a professor that she had who was just an outstanding professor, was very much involved into nutrition, and this was many years ago. And Sandy said her professor said that everyone should have chocolate every single day. Now, this professor had lived and worked in South America, and she had gotten into the habit of drinking hot chocolate when she was down there, and she said it just was wonderful. Well, when she got involved in her nutritional research, she said the benefits of chocolate were so strong that if people had chocolate every day in their diet, it would be, for health reasons, one of the best things they could ever include. And I have never forgotten that, so any excuse for a piece of chocolate is good. And you know, you don't necessarily have to have the sweet, sweet, sweet chocolate. You can have just real good chocolate. You can make chocolate and bread, you know, put it in breads. You can put it, do so many things with it. There's nothing like it, and it is good for you, naturally. How can you feel good after eating it and not be good for you? Let me share with you a poem by Bianca Sumbarak. She said, colored eggs with icing faces lay hidden now in secret places. As little ones with Easter baskets in hand make their own fun-filled plans to find all they can. The White House always has a huge Easter egg roll, and I don't know why. I guess perhaps because I haven't been around, you know, lots of little children in the past few years, and I thought, I wonder if there are many Easter egg hunts that go on in different places. It used to be such a big tradition. But I guess it is still big for many, many people, and kids just love it. I do know of some families that they have a relative that has a huge house, and they will go and hide stuff all over the house, and the kids, it's one way of burning off energy. They will come home from church, and then they go to their relative's home, and they're just buzzing up and down those steps looking for Easter eggs in all the right places, and maybe even some of the wrong places, too. Anyway, Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Now, for those of you that have had a significant paranormal experience, I would love for you to send me that. Write it out for me. Send it to me in an email. I'm putting together a book of 100 stories, and I would love to have yours, because I believe that when this book is published, it will give people an opportunity to see that the average individual has many experiences that maybe they only share with their friends and family. But in this book, we're going to be sharing experiences so that people will know they're not alone in what they go through. So send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at DelphiInternational.com. You can also send an email to the Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. For those of you listening in Alaska, I'm going to be traveling up to that beautiful state the week of the 12th of April. I will still be broadcasting live both from Fairbanks as well as Anchorage, Alaska. But if you want to get in touch with me to set up a private consultation while I'm up there, just call my office at 800-872-8852. Well, this is spring. It's the time of year where people are out working in their yards and they're prepping things up. And do you know what I think is absolutely awesome? is to start preparing for hummingbirds. There is a wonderful, wonderful program on these beautiful birds. I had no idea there were so many different species and that they were so absolutely exotic looking. But I love hummingbirds, and we get them in the Pacific Northwest quite frequently is because we're part of a migratory route for certain species. So this is a good time to hang up hummingbird feeders so that you can have that food for them there. And, of course, it's sugar and water, and you can go online and you can find out the exact recipe. But there's one thing when you put those feeders up, and I passed a woman's home when I was out walking my Scotties yesterday, and this woman had four feeders up. It was amazing. Try to give some space between the feeders so the hummingbirds are going to be able to get around the feeders. And there are some feeders out now that have a flatter bottom to them so that they are going to be able to get to the water nectar that you prepare. And one of the things that I heard is that with your hummingbirds, they actually will memorize the places where they have found food. So if you are consistent in making sure that you keep the feeders clean because you don't want the birds to become sick because you've allowed a mold or a bacteria to develop in the sugar water. So you want to be sure that you keep those feeders clean, put fresh water and sugar in it, and keep those feeders somewhat in the same location because they will come back time and time and time and time again. And they really identify with colors. And if you have bright, colorful flowers and, you know, trees that are flowering trees that have a lot of nectar available, they'll be right there in your yard, and it will be absolutely delightful for you to experience. So here it is springtime. This is a good time to prepare for that. And also, you can attract butterflies. And I think that it's just such an exceptional experience when you can have your butterflies migrating through your yard. But what you want to do, if you really want to set up your yard for the butterfly experience, listen in just a moment after we come back from a break, and I'll give you some tips, and you will have hummingbirds and butterflies galore. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be coming back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Okay, we're going to touch up on this, and then I've got some information for you if you're looking for a job. So we're going to be sharing that in just a moment. Let's get back to the butterflies. What you want to do is pick a special spot. Your garden, whether it's small like a window box or you have a whole bunch of space, what you want is a sunny spot that's sheltered from the wind by perhaps a bush, a fence, something that allows the butterflies to feel a sense of safety. And you want to have plants in your garden that will be useful for the butterflies, because they all start out as caterpillars and they want something to feed on. Yes, and that doesn't always make us happy, but caterpillars like munching on milkweeds, nettles, violets, and passion vines, while adult butterflies enjoy the nectar of marigolds, zinnias, and daisies. So the wider the variety of plants, the wider the variety of butterflies that you're going to find yourself attracting. Also, you can make a butterfly lounge. Have you ever heard of that one before? I hadn't. They love, butterflies love to just rest in open sunshine area after they eat. So if you have a place where they can rest, such as a stone or a brick, that they can just stay on where they're not going to be disturbed, they will like that a great deal. Also, adding a miniature pond, butterflies like to sip water from small puddles, which you can simulate with a saucer or a small plastic container, and you can drop in a branch or a rock to give them an easy place to land. So there's all kinds of information I know you can find on the web regarding this, but there's nothing more satisfying than sitting out in the yard, springtime, summer, and fall, and having these wonderful, wonderful creatures in your backyard. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Remember, if you're a first-time listener, all I need is your first name or your initial, and then I like to know where you're calling in from, and I'll tell you about yourself and about what's going on in your life. Are you looking for a job? Are you looking for something brand new, something that's in your own field? Well, I came across some information about some people who took a very resourceful attitude about this. Now, it wasn't that way for a while. There was a woman by the name of Lori whose husband, he'd been laid off from an automotive company. He was searching for work, and they were both sweating bullets. How were they going to make it? And she would always try to keep a positive attitude with him. Well, he got really, really discouraged. And once the situation where he had been let go, they found the economy was affecting them in so many ways, as it always does. Well, he was so concerned about not being able to find work that his self-esteem really started going downhill. Now, Lori was very grateful for the blessings they had, and she said, we were fortunate than a lot of people because she still had her job. And she said, we are going to have to really look at things differently than we have in the past. So she supported her husband every way that she could, and she encouraged him. Now, eventually, her husband did find a job. And she was on a social networking site called LinkedIn when there was a person that she saw some information about. The person's name was Tori Johnson. And Tori had put on this social environment that people should start a job club in their area to share contacts, search techniques, and give moral support with others looking for work. And Lori thought, this is a good idea. This is something that would just be absolutely wonderful. She had a background as a recruiter, and she thought this was just a nice fit for her. She said, gee, if we had had something like this when my husband was going through so much stress, maybe it would have helped. So she decided she was going to sign up for this, and she did. Now, what she did is she posted on LinkedIn and Facebook that they were starting a job club, and if you knew of anybody looking for work, this is sort of an out-of-the-box way to make things happen, and they suggested a meeting place, which was a local coffee shop, on a Thursday night. Do you know they had 12 people show up for that very first meeting? There was one man that had just received a pink slip he had worked for most of his life. Another woman was facing foreclosure on her home because she was out of work. So here were these people meeting on Thursday evenings and not wailing and moaning and being in pity pots, but just having a chance to communicate their needs. Lori found out about people in her local area that would come in and speak. She found out about some business coaches that would donate their time. She found out about a salon that would help people do makeovers, you know, learn how to dress and fix themselves up differently so they didn't look like something that just came out of the local dump. And she said she realized that all of these little steps were important because even if someone is extremely qualified, if they don't feel good about themselves, they weren't going to get a job because that feeling was going to be coming across to the persons interviewing them. Well, she started the It Factor Job Club. Every single one of the people that had come to that first meeting ended up getting a job. She started a second club that was successful. She started a single mom, Sheila Rock Club, and that was successful. And she said, it is absolutely amazing how when you can help somebody find work, you're going to find that they regain a purpose and a sense of self, and they will be able to provide for their families and have a good life. But it is working together that makes it happen. This is Donna Sebo. It's been a delight sharing this time with you today. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. When necessity requires that you become the mother of invention, it does mean you think outside of the box. Go for it. Don't be afraid. That's what the American spirit is all about. We'll be talking tomorrow about getting out of debt hell. Hope to see you here. This is Donna. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.